I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, anti-Semites taking over public comment periods.
Jews did 9/11.
Please cut that speaker off.
Plus, a final plea for justice in the Wendy Traynor case, and a Florida bill would allow counties to count ballots by hand. We'll discuss the pros and cons, all of that and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And I'd want to thank you today for caring. I want to thank you for caring so much about some of the stories and the issues that we bring up in the show, sharing those stories, trying to rally support for issues that we care about, that you care about. I know that Wendy Traynor's family has certainly felt that support. They've told me as much because we've talked about this case quite a bit. And to me, you know, there are unfortunately a lot of murder cases. We have record high homicides in Washington State. Seattle, I think it was just a few days ago, hit their record high for homicides. And so there might be people who, you know, think, well, why are you spending so much time talking about this one murder from 2017. Well, to me, Wendy Traynor mattered. Her life mattered. I don't think that this has led to a place that is truly justice for her as an individual and for her family. But of course, it is bigger than that. It speaks to a bigger issue that we're faced with in our criminal justice system on multiple fronts. You know, this idea that, incarcerating people, we don't need to do that to keep the public safe, or that incarcerating people who do bad things is inherently racist or inequitable. This idea that, you know, even if someone has gotten to a point in their life where they're committing heinous crimes and victimizing other people, that we have to seriously consider the pigmentation of their skin when deciding what justice looks like, rather than make a concerted effort for people who, of all skin colors, across all aspects of society and socioeconomic status, instead of looking at, okay, if there are inequalities in our system, how do we address them at the core? How do we address them before people take on a life of crime? And no, we need to address them once somebody's already done something heinous. And so the Wendy Traynor case, you know, to me, speaks to so many aspects of the system that is really failing innocent, law-abiding people. We talked on the show this week about how Wendy Traynor's killer, Joshua Ellis, is going to be sentenced tomorrow. We're expecting that to happen at 1:30 p.m. in Pierce County Superior Court. We talked on the show this week about how Josh Ellis's public defender is going to argue and has argued that his skin color means he ought to get the lowest sentence allowed by law. I categorically reject that. I know Wendy's family does as well. This morning, I was very happy that the Tacoma News Tribune printed an op-ed that I sent to them on this very issue. If you haven't read it already, the headline, Joshua Ellis killed Wendy Traynor, race shouldn't impact how long he spends in prison. And in that op-ed, I outlined some of the arguments that we've made this week on the show, that this case has nothing to do with skin color, and that prioritizing his skin color when deciding what kind of sentence to give him is taking our criminal justice system backward. It is the opposite of where we should be going. It is the opposite of progress. And removing Lady Justice's blindfold does not make things more equitable. The reason I wanted to publish that piece in the News Tribune is because I thought that that was the audience that needed to hear what we've been saying. You know, you guys have common sense. I know you do. I know you do from your comments and your contributions to this show. You know what's happening in this case is deeply wrong. And that's why we've been talking about it. But I think that there is a particular audience in this state who does believe in this anti-racist mentality, very backward thinking, that is better served by reading that message. So yes, while we're running a business and I, you know, have, when I have something to write and something to say, we certainly want to make sure it's published for those of you who support the show. I really felt like the audience of the Tacoma News Tribune that covers Pierce County, where this case is going to be heard tomorrow, is the audience that really needed to hear what we had to say. I will say, I appreciate them publishing it because I think anything in regard to race is controversial, especially when it's coming from the white former Fox News lady. And I'm sure that the opinion editor over at the News Tribune is going to get some grief for publishing something from the right wing, Brandi Cruz, whatever it is. And so I give them a lot of credit for having the bravery to publish my points on this about race. It was one issue, just tiny little issue I had. Just I want the only reason I'm pointing it out is because I know that you guys are going to bring it up. And so I wanted you to know why it's in there. So the very the second line of my op-ed says, Ellis is black, Wendy was white. And you might notice that black is capitalized and white is not. That was not my decision. And they did, in fact, the Tacoma News Tribune reach out to me and explain that they were going to change it and capitalize black because that is their standard style. And this goes back to a decision the Associated Press made in 2020. And the Associated Press writes, not only why it's not only a wire service, but also they send out a style guide that a lot of news entities follow so that the style of writing and grammar and stuff is consistent across news agencies. And they made a decision in 2020 to have it be in their AP style guide that B in black is capitalized when referring to people in a racial, ethnic, or cultural context. They said that it conveys an essential and shared sense of history, identity, and community among people who identify as black. They also did the same for indigenous, but they did not do the same for white. And look, you know, the editor had messaged me and said, hey, we're going to capitalize black. Here's why. And I cared more about getting that piece published in the Tacoma News Tribune specifically than I did about pushing back on a style guide issue. I will say, though, I think it speaks to the problem at hand. I think it speaks to the problem at hand where we have this hyper obsession with skin color to the point of trying to elevate people kind of artificially in a way above other skin colors as a way to make up for the wrongs of the past. So now I've got this sentence in this story that's, you know, oh, Ellis was black, capital B, and Wendy Traynor was white, lowercase w. And to me, it almost speaks to what's at play here, where Joshua Ellis, who murdered someone, is being held way, way up high. And you know, there's this search for justice for him that's equitable. And then Wendy Traynor, who is just an innocent 25-year-old who was shot in the head and left to rot, W, you know, because she was white and her life was worthless or whatever it is. And so to me, it almost was this very indicative of the issue that we're trying to raise. So ahead of tomorrow's sentencing, I would appreciate if you guys would go share that article, the op-ed in the Tacoma News Tribune with everyone you know, so that regardless of the outcome tomorrow, we know that people were made aware of this and it didn't happen in the dark. And I think sometimes that's the most important. I'll also say that I've been hearing from a lot of you who are so upset by this story, who are like, what can we do? We want to go protest outside the court, or we want to write letters to the judge. I would advise against it, honestly. And, you know, no, I'm all for a good protest and showing. But I think when you have an ongoing criminal case, you never want to look like you are trying to, even if that's not the intent, you know, intimidate someone into a result. And, you know, this case has come all this way. The decision is going to be what the decision is. I don't think protesting outside the court, I don't think sending letters to the judge will have the desired effect. I think he has the information that he needs. I hope that he makes the right decision to give Joshua Ellis a sentence that's commensurate with the heinous crime that he committed. I will say, though, and Nicole, maybe you could pull up the courtroom again. We got that from them, right? The information on where the hearing is tomorrow. Do you have that in an email? Yeah, just to get that ready if you want to articulate it for folks. The one thing I'll say you can do, if you want to, before we move on to another story today, is the Traynor family is perfectly fine if folks want to come and just show support for them and for the family, and they'll be handing out little ribbons in honor of Wendy, and so that is perfectly acceptable. I would just encourage you, if you do go to the court, as you know, just be on your best behavior, be respectable, no outbursts or anything like that. It is a court of law, and I expect nothing less than you guys to be on your best behavior. Nicole, just flag me when you have that information. We'll give it to you maybe towards the end of the show, but we have the information on the courtroom and on the time, but it is at 1:30 p.m. in Pierce County Superior Court. Okay, we have a couple stories on this left-wing anti-Semitism that is just springing up like crazy because we, again, have given these lunatics cookies throughout the years so they can protest any issue that they want to come and scream about, and then they took a sharp turn toward anti-Semitism after screaming and crying about right-wing Nazis for 5 years. Give me a freaking break. So anyway, one of the things that has happened, and you're starting to see these clips pop up all over social media, is you'll get city council meetings, county council meetings, and you've got these people who come up and they testify and they want to talk about how much they hate Israel. And sometimes, I'll say, this is true in Seattle, for instance, you know, Shama Sawant wanted to introduce resolution for a ceasefire. And it's like, okay, you're a Seattle city councilwoman. That's just distracting from city business. So thankfully they didn't even bring it forth. But I do think sometimes these cities and counties ought to just stick to the business of their city or county as to not open the floor to individuals who might have hate to spew. But even so, you've had people, for instance, in Tacoma, and I'll have Nicole come in to explain, because first of all, Nicole gets an A-plus for her work, because she had to sit through all of these council meetings, testimony, and listen to the absolute insanity.
Nonsense.
Oh my, I was looking at her over there. I had to take a picture of her because she was like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Well, on top
so
of,
bad.
On top of this obnoxiousness that just happened to be in Tacoma, the issue of declawing cats. And so.
So you got crazy cat ladies.
Right. So that, well, no, it just is a, like an interesting topic to yes. be able to play off of. And so these people used the cats to get into the meeting and then made it obnoxious.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's important to understand when I play this clip, which is bananas.
Crazy cat lady.
Is that, no, you're not, I didn't call you a crazy cat lady today. At least today. I didn't call you that today. Is that usually at these meetings, you can only do public testimony on agenda items. They might have a little part of testimony where it can be broader than that, but usually you have to stick to items that are on the agenda. And that's their way of sort of semi-keeping things under control. And don't get me wrong. Usually I'm like, all for, you know, public, come, testify, be heard. These people work for you. And I don't necessarily agree with the idea that it has to be limited to what they've put on their schedule.
Right. And like, I almost hesitate to give this guy a...
Well, there's more than one guy, right?
Well, I think it might be the same guy calling two different places, at least one or two people. Anyway, I'm a little bit hesitant to give them the space on our show because I think they're doing it for attention.
Yeah.
But
it raises an important debate that I want to have after we play the clip. So anything we need to know about the Tacoma clip before we play it?
I just hope that I got all the
You didn't
words
bleep,
out.
But you tried to cut out yes, sort of swear words. Words. If we miss some of them, maybe have your kids, if you're in the car, just plug their ears for 10 seconds, but we should
We're
be fine.
Okay,
so this is the Tacoma City Council meeting, and you'll hear, so in Tacoma, the mayor sits in on it, Victoria Woodard, and so you'll hear her do a really good job, I think, of shutting people down.
She tries.
Go ahead.
GTVflyers.com. Hail Hitler. Jews did 9/11.
I'm sorry. We're going. Please cut that speaker off.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to bring up the cat declawing as well. And similar to what the last caller said, it is much like circumcision because it...
I'm sorry. That is not on tonight's agenda. That is not something we have jurisdiction over. If you would like to speak about cats, we're going to cut you off. I'm sorry. That ends your time speaking with us tonight. We're now going to move on to our next speaker. And what I want to say to any other speaker who is online tonight, this is an opportunity for you to talk about something that is on tonight's agenda. If you want to talk about cats, that's fine. But if you go off topic, I will cut your time this evening. We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Well, hi, yes. See, I'm Herschel Schoenberg of the ADL. And, like, I'd like to talk to you about the declawing of cats. It's terrible. You know, it's like circumcising the cat's feet. Well, you see, cats are like little people, and like, you know, the Nazis, like, they circumcise
their
feet.
All right, sir, you are going to be cut off this evening. You are not talking about things that are on tonight's agenda. We're going to move on to the next speaker.
Okay, we're going to play a second meeting, City of Linwood. This one was also in the news last night for similar reasons.
Why in this nation, when we have protected groups of citizens, why is there a double standard among protected groups? I mean, when you have a large group of African Americans committing crime, we call that a gang. When we have a large group of Italians, you know, committing organized crime, it's a mafia. But when we have a large group of Jewish people doing the same thing, then it's just a coincidence. It doesn't make any sense to me. And again, it's just a weird coincidence. Because we don't have a word that we can use to describe this conglomerate of people that, you know, during a circumcision, when a newborn boy is 8 days old, the rabbis go and put their mouths direct on the genitals.
Mr. Berger, do you have any comments that are relevant to the City of Linwood?
I don't want my money going to
Israel. I'll ask you again. Do you have comments that are
children and women
that are relevant to the City of Linwood?
Yeah, definitely. When was the last time you guys were contacted by the Anti-Defamation League? Because I know they've been going around in our state contacting city councils and throwing out memos. Now, this is an organization established in 1913 to protect a Jewish child murdering pedophile known as Leo Frank. So why are they in charge of anything that has anything to do with municipal governments?
Council,
so,
excuse me, Mr. Berger, those comments don't seem to be relevant to the city of Linwood, and your 3 minutes are up.
All right, we can come away from that.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Limited public forum, and that means that
right.
You can restrict.
You didn't have
the
to
comments.
Interrupt me. I was just giving my 2 cents. That's what I'm saying is people can't even come on here and speak. I think I have the clock, but then you're interrupting me just to make a correct to
Your,
try to
Your
correct
Honor,
me.
Can I request
okay, I can
that
be wrong,
you get them cut
but
off,
you can be
please.
Quiet and let me finish. You know what I mean?
There's quite a robust.
Send to the Congo and the news to Israel. Fuck you guys.
Oh, jeez. So anyway, that's what we're dealing with at city council meetings across. I mean, that was in Linwood, down in Tacoma. Seattle has crap like this all the time. And I go back to... First of all, I think Tacoma did a much better job of handling it than Linwood did, certainly. I think you just have to, if it's vulgar, hateful, whatever it is, you just have to cut it off. And you also ruin it for people who, one, do want to testify, but two, I think that there's a good case to be made for if a citizen wants to, in the minute or the 3 minutes, whatever the rules are, come in and give a spiel, no matter how off-topic it is, to their elected leaders. I actually don't have a problem with that. I think that you should be able to talk to them about anything you want under the sun, friggin' space aliens if you want to. I mean, they work for you. I don't agree with the sentiment that it has to pertain to city business. I know I'm going to get blowback on this. I don't agree with the sentiment it has to pertain to city business. I don't agree with the sentiment that it has to pertain to something that reasonable people even think is true, although space aliens are obviously in existence. However, I think when it's hateful, whatever, cut it off. But what that does when you get into this insanity that's happening right now is it does limit opportunities for people to come in. And I think it's just going to further restrict the rules and the regulations around public testimony, which everyone ought to have an opportunity to talk about. It also illustrates what we were talking about on the show yesterday, which is this: give a mouse a cookie. And now these people who've been allowed to spew hateful nonsense for a long time about issues the left wing has no problem about, anti-cop animus, calling cops, whatever, serial killers, F the police, all this stuff. And it was like, oh, well, we got to allow this, anything around, social justice issues. And then that same group of people took a hard turn to hating Jewish individuals. And now it's like, oh, well, now we got to shut them up. You should have shut them up a long time ago. Absolutely ridiculous. Okay. Speaking of, a study says 1 in 5 college students sympathize with Hamas. This is from campus reform. 86% of students say they have learned about the situation from social media, while a third of students say they never or rarely fact-check the information that they intake. And look, I mean, if you're learning about the situation from social media alone, it's not a surprise to me that 1 in 5 college students say they sympathize with Hamas because of the amount of disinformation, misinformation that's out there. Not only that Hamas and sympathizers and probably China and Iran and Russia are putting out there on the internet, but also mainstream media commentators. I mean, who you have seen taken to social media with a very sympathetic narrative toward terrorists. And so now, according to Campus Reform, again, 1 in 5 college students, 22% on college campuses. The survey was done by the website intelligent.com. And by the way, I'll note that they said only 25% of college students claim to be very knowledgeable about the current war between Israel and Hamas, which I would say that if 25% are claiming to be very knowledgeable, 1% of that 25% actually are. Because if you go out to any of these protests or whatever it is, and we're going to talk to Ari Hoffman coming up soon about what he experienced over in North Carolina when he went to speak on a campus about what's happening in Israel, every single one of them, if you ask them, are going to say that they're knowledgeable about what's happening in the Middle East. And if you sat there and quizzed them, I bet you 1% would actually be knowledgeable about the situation at hand. So that's what's happening in our college campuses. It's starting in our elementary schools. I mean, we played a clip earlier on the show this week of the kid who went on the morning announcements and talked about pronouns. There have been multiple stories this week of local school districts, not even just in Seattle, over in Snoqualmie, having walkouts in support of Palestine, where they give these anti-Semitic chants. So you've had high schools, elementary schools, ideology starts to seep into classrooms. You've got the lady in the middle school classroom in Seattle who's helping kids in this group send nasty grams to Moms for Liberty. And then you got kids that go into high school and they're doing walkouts for any issue that suits them, and there's no punishments for them whatsoever. And so now they're doing walkouts in solidarity with Hamas. And then, of course, you got kids who are in college who 1 in 5 say they sympathize with Hamas. The only place they get their information is from the internet. You have multiple social media platforms who only suppress content from the right. And so they lift up and leave alone all this far left wacko content. Is it any wonder? I mean, none of this has surprised me. And then they turn into adults, like the guy at the Linwood City Council meeting and the Tacoma City Council meeting, and they feel like they can come on and spew absolute racist, horrible nonsense. Not a surprise where we found ourselves. So coming up next, Ari Hoffman was invited by Turning Point USA to give a speech at the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. And Ari has, of course, spoken out not only publicly and in our state. He's a conservative radio host for 570 KVI, but he's also been on national programs talking about, as a Jewish American, what's playing out in the Middle East. And so it is no surprise that Ari Hoffman was greeted by some students who were less than happy to see him there. So we'll get to that interview coming up next. But first, I'm going to talk about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. Keep reaching out to me. I love hearing your stories. I get emails and updates all the time and comments from people who are saying, you inspired me to start and I'm down, you know, 20 pounds, 30 pounds. I'm down 37 pounds on the program. My favorite part about it is if I have a couple days where I'm like off, and Thanksgiving was one of them, you know, you'll go out, you'll enjoy, you'll eat or drink more than you intended. Previous Brandy would then fall off the wagon. I'd be like, oh, all my hard work is down the drain, so I might as well just keep on this trajectory. With Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, you know, they taught me what to eat in the right portions and how to maintain that weight loss and that lifestyle for as long as I choose to. And it really makes it easy to kind of get back on your feet and say, oh, I've got a plan, I've got structure, I've got a program, so I can continue to do this. So check out Eastside Weight Loss Clinic if you've been thinking that it's really time to cut some weight. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. You start by just doing a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. He'll tell you all about the program. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routines, no drugs or injections. Again, it's just teaching you a healthy lifestyle that is easy to maintain. Eastside Weight Loss Clinic.com. Okay, as I mentioned, our friend Ari Hoffman was invited to the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. And that's brave. I give him credit for going to a college campus these days. I gotta say, if someone invited me to a college campus, I would go, but I would make sure that there was a lot of security there. And especially given the climate, I mean, the violence that we've seen happening all over the world, not just in the Middle East, but of course, all over when it comes to these protests happening and these pro-Palestine and sometimes pro-Hamas sympathizers. So Ari Hoffman knew that he was going to be probably met by some protesters, and he was correct. So he was speaking to this group of students. I think we have the video. Oh, hey. And they all got up at one time, and I don't know if it was organized or whatever, to get out, and they're calling him a Zionist and all this stuff, and he just sort of sings them off with a song. But there were also a lot of protesters outside. So anyway, we wanted to invite Ari Hoffman on to talk about the message he went to try to convey to students in North Carolina, and then about some of the hate and vitriol that he was met with. Ari Hoffman, welcome back to Undivided.
Always a pleasure, Brandy. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. You've been all over the place. You were in North Carolina, UNC Charlotte.
Yep.
Who invited you there to speak?
The Turning Point USA kids did. I work with Turning Point USA a lot. They're a conservative activist organization for college kids. They talk about politics and stuff on college campuses. And they're good kids. They talk a lot about religious values as well. And I've spoken for them at University of Washington. I've gone to a few of their conventions. I broadcasted from their conventions. And a lot of these kids are having questions about the Israel stuff.
Yeah.
So what was interesting was UW had booked me before October 7th. They had booked me before any of that. And then when October 7th rolled around, they said, well, now we kind of got to talk about this. So we had a great talk about that. And I guess they put out the word to other Turning Point chapters, hey, if you need somebody on Israel, get this guy. So the first one that called, and there's been a few others, but the first one that called was UNC of Charlotte. And they said, hey, can you come out and talk to the kids? And I said, sure, I'd be happy to. So I was there for a grand total of 36 hours yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, in and out. I know we were kind of in touch on some other things, and you're like, I don't have to be on a plane and all this and make it happen. But so whenever Turning Point USA goes onto a college campus, there's a lot of like protests, no matter what the speech is about. It's like, oh, yes. It's Turning Point USA speech. Like, let's get over there and rile up or whatever. So did you anticipate some level of that?
Yes, but not to the level it was. Wow. Because here's the thing about Turning Point USA. They have their tables. They do tabling like any other college campus group, and they have their events, but it's when the speakers come out is when the activists really go bonkers crazy.
Yeah.
Now, these activists had done their homework. We've spoken before about my crusade, I guess you can call it, to reveal who all these psychos are who are teachers who are pushing this pro-Hamas narrative. Every single activist who was there to protest me, and there were 100 of them waiting outside, they had to sneak me in a different entrance and take me out a different exit. And I got to say, campus security was great. And the dean of the university actually came by to see all this for herself. And she was phenomenal. This is very different than what I'm used to. I'm usually used to the police at the campuses are told not to show up or not to do anything or be in the shadows. They had a whole evacuation plan. The dean was there and the dean was horrified by the behavior of these other students. But what was happening on campus was there were 100 of them waiting for me. They all had their faces covered and they were calling me the Zionist doxer. Now, I think they put the emphasis on the wrong syllable, because does that mean I'm doxing Zionists? I'm very confused by that. But they all painted their hands red with blood, which was actually kind of funny, because when they tried grabbing the microphone, they couldn't because their hands have all the gooey stuff on it. So Q&A was kind of a mess for that reason. That was kind of entertaining. They're all wrapped in Hamas keffiyehs. But here's something else interesting, Brandy. The signs they had, with the exception of the Kishama Sawant signs that we see out here at University of Washington, the banners, the signs, the chants are identical. Now, I know from when I used to work for national Jewish organizations that had clubs on campuses and had clubs in public schools, you had a template. And your template was for your banners. Here's our Hanukkah party. Here's our Purim party. Here's our Passover party. You had templates you could use to print this stuff up, and here's your money. This stuff is being coordinated on a national level when the flyers, when the chants, when the banners are exactly the same in North Carolina that we see here at University of Washington.
Do you think, though, some of that's just they see it on social media and they're like, oh, that's what I'm going to chant?
Well, the chants, I mean, it's the same refrains they have, but we've actually revealed certain organizations, like this organization Within Our Lifetime, which are the ones that vandalized the New York Public Library. And they're the ones who have also targeted the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree. And they're the ones who have been involved in a lot of the stuff in New York. They have released a toolkit with how to plan one of these pro-Hamas activists. And they're not the only group that's doing this. But if you look at all these different toolkits, and I think I've seen three or four of them, they all have templates. They have templates for flyers. They have templates for banners. They all have the same chance. This stuff is being pushed nationally.
I saw a video with you were actually speaking in the building, and you had said it was maybe 20 minutes into your speech where a lot of these pro-Hamas sympathizer students got up and walked out. Was there something that led to them walking out at that moment? Were they told to leave?
I think this was a planned thing. Like, we're going to heckle him for 20 minutes and then we're all going to show unity and walk out. I think that's really what it was. I was expecting that. It seemed kind of pre-orchestrated, pre-planned. And a few of them stayed for Q&A, and all of them had prepared questions.
Such as?
You could tell which ones are the hardcore radicals. You could tell which ones actually came thinking they were going to talk, because the ones that wanted to talk stuck around and, as their narrative crumbled, didn't really know what to ask next. As I shot down their arguments one at a time. One kid, this was my favorite. I'm a huge Mets fan. I'm from New York originally. He's wearing a Mets sweatshirt in the room. And he was heckling me. And I point to him and I go, dude, you're a Mets fan? I'm a Mets fan. You know why? They support Israel. Their owner is Jewish and gives a ton of money to Israel. And they started a Major League Baseball franchise in Israel. Didn't work because they like soccer more. So really, thank you for supporting Israel. And he tore off the sweatshirt right there. So I think our mutual friend, Matt Gilbert, said, oh, look at that. The Mets are still taking losses in the offseason.
When you say that they're doing the, you know, you could tell the difference between who are the kind of extreme radicals. How many of these kids do you feel like, or felt like, based on what they said or questions they asked, actually had a firm grasp on the situation?
None of them. Mm-hmm. None of them at all. There were some activists who I saw in the parking garage. So they were coming from off campus, whether they were students or not. But it's the same kind of thing you see at UW, where outside people come to be part of these protests. The narrative they are using is the one that Hamas is using. Oh, nobody was tortured, executed, and raped on October 7th. The Israeli army did it. That's the new one. We're literally watching Holocaust denial happening in real time. Look, it took 75 years for that really to happen with the actual Holocaust. And now you're seeing it happen, what, 6 weeks, 7 weeks later? These are the new narratives coming out. And if you notice, you don't see any of the women's groups talking about any of the rape. What happened to the Me Too movement? Why haven't we heard from any of them? You're not seeing that at all. And these are some of the worst atrocities committed in the history of mankind.
Yeah. What was your, you know, going into it? What is the message that you wanted to share with those students?
What I started talking about, and I took some of the kids for coffee afterwards, was I was telling them is that people don't like things that conflict with their narrative. They're the me generation, the iPhone generation, where they can have their own news the way they want it, their music the way they want, their social circle. They don't have to go to parties. They can have their friends in their pocket. It's not like our day where, like, if you wanted to be social, you had to go hang out with people you liked and people you didn't like. They can tailor their worlds around them, and they don't like things that conflict with their worldviews. So the people who are ripping down posters, some of them are like, this makes me feel angry because I think I'm right and this conflicts with it. Gone. There's other people who are doing it for more malicious reasons. But you see that online, too. They can't accept the fact that they might be wrong. They live in their echo chamber and they see no reason to come out of it.
Yeah. Let's end with this. Campus Reform was out with an article. It was a study saying that 1 in 5 students on college campuses are sympathetic toward Hamas. Does that ring true to you?
That sounds about right. And I think something that we need to study is also today, we had a whole bunch of the high schools here have walkouts in the Issaquah School District. And we had them in the Snoqualmie School District last week, and Bellevue's planning it for next week. So how many of these high school kids are being brainwashed the exact same way? Now, college campuses is different because you have a lot of foreign students as well. And we don't know what countries they came from. Did they come from some of these countries that are supportive of Hamas, that are supporting Hamas? Are they here on student visas? I'm not going to go down the immigration rabbit hole. But the question is, are they U.S. college students? Or are they from somewhere else? But yeah, that statistic scarily sounds right. And I also want to know how many of the faculty feel the same way.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we'll ever find out, but some of them post more than perhaps they should. And I'm glad you're exposing them because I think that's important. All right, Ari Hoffman, I told you this when you went over there. Proud of you for standing up for this, for speaking out. You know, 100 protesters be damned. And we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Brandy. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, Ari Hoffman, he's awesome. And he's been dealing with a lot of stuff, you know, online. And he has really made this. I'll also note that there's a, it's horrible, but I don't know. We're going to talk about this later in the show. There is going to be a screening in Seattle. Is that tonight, Nicole? It is tonight. Yeah. Of some of the like GoPro footage from Hamas, some of the footage they took of their assault on innocent Israelis. And you've probably heard about that. That's been screened elsewhere across the country. I'll say that I was invited to come to it. But, and you might criticize my decision. To me, I have no question how horrible it was. I have no question that Hamas did the deeds that have been described in detail against women, against babies. I don't have doubt about it. And so when I was invited, I just said, look, you know, because I've heard it's about the most horrific thing that you'll ever see. I just said, I don't know what the point would be for me to see that. You know, I've seen clips here and there that have made social media before they've been taken down. I know Ari Hoffman is going to go and bless him. I just thought, I think there are a lot of journalists who, especially in Seattle, who do need to see that to really open their eyes and stop this sympathetic coverage toward these pro-Hamas people. And there's pro-Palestine, pro-peace, and then there's pro-Hamas. And what we've seen and the anti-Semitism is much different. I think that there are a lot of journalists who need to see that. But I hope you don't think less of me for declining that invitation. It's just not something that I want burned into my brain for the rest of my life. And I don't think I need to see it to be able to sympathize and be horrified about what happened on October 7th. All right, coming up next, we're going to dive into the continued debate over stolen vehicles and whether they warrant the full-on attention of law enforcement, full-blown police pursuits or not. Horrifying story from a woman who was robbed at gunpoint in Sumner from somebody who wanted her car. But first, if you're in the market to sell your home, or maybe I know we have a lot of landlords who listen who've been reaching out to us and I'm a landlord in Tacoma. I'm a landlord in Seattle. I'm selling my units. I'm done with all of this nonsense. If that's you, visit sellwithwest.com because he has a couple things that he can offer you that traditional real estate agents might not be able to. One, he's going to give you a free market analysis. You know, how is your home positioned? How is it going to do when it hits the market? He can also help you out with if you need to have some updates. If you've got, you've had some maybe renters in those units, you need some updates, you need some repairs, you need some fixing, they can handle that for you and they can help you pay for it up front. It's called the Listing Boost Concierge Service. We talked to Susan in Federal Way, who's a wonderful success story about what that service did for her.
I told him up front that I was very interested, that I did not have the time or the finances to do what needed to be done. And he immediately jumped in with, well, I do. And I would say in 2 to 3 weeks, they had landscaping done. They had all the painting done. The new floors were put in. All the lighting was put in. It just was all so fast. And the rest is history. It was on the market for 7 days. I was able to get well over listing price.
To be specific, Susan got 20 offers, sold it for 15% over list price, and ended up getting $200,000 more than an investor offered her before the renovations. $200,000 more just because she went to sellwithwest.com. So I highly recommend, if you're thinking about selling your home, you do it too. Sellwithwest.com. Sellwithwest.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. A woman was robbed at gunpoint outside Winco in Sumner, and she is now sending a message to would-be young criminals that a car is simply not worth someone's life. It is an important message. It is a true message, but it also plays into a larger conversation that's been happening about motor vehicle theft in our state. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so there's motor vehicle theft, like stealing your Kia, your Hyundai from a parking lot or garage, and this is happening all the time. But then there are increasingly so these, whether it's happening on the side of a highway, whether it's happening at gunpoint, there are these horrifying examples of mostly young men who are carjacking people. And you can imagine the absolute horror. So not only have you been victimized in that way, then they take off with your car. This happened to a woman in Sumner. Here's an article from Cairo 7. Quote, a car is not worth anybody's life. Woman robbed at gunpoint outside Sumner Winco shares her story. Her name is Lydia Vasquez. Here is just a clip from that Cairo 7 news report.
A car is not worth anybody's life.
In what was supposed to be a routine run to Winco Foods,
I walked toward the door. I was going to go inside.
Quickly took an awful turn for Lydia Vasquez.
These two kids called me from behind. Hey, you got $5. When I went to hand him the quarters, he grabbed my hand, pulled me towards him, took a gun out of his pocket and said, give me your keys.
So this is actually the second story like this that we've talked about this week. Back on the show, I think on Monday or Tuesday, we talked about this 50-year-old man who was killed in a crash involving a teen driving a stolen vehicle. And so you've got a kid who made off with a vehicle, and then he hits a 50-year-old and kills him, and his passenger was also seriously injured. The 50-year-old's passenger seriously injured when that happened. And so you take all this into consideration, and it reminded me, and we went back and pulled the clip of debate that was happening on the floor of the Washington State Senate back in March. So this was March 8th, and the reason I remember specifically is me, a lot of you, where were we March 8th? We were down on the steps of the Washington State Capitol urging lawmakers, Democrats specifically, to pass a bill to repeal some of the restrictions on police pursuits. We were standing there with a family that lost their young girl, Immaculate Golday, to a guy who was driving a stolen vehicle, stolen landscaping truck, hit her and killed her. While she was walking home from a sleepover at a friend's house. And simultaneously, we got news that Senator Mark Mullett, a Democrat, had resuscitated the police pursuit fix. It was being debated on the floor of the Senate. So we ran in. I was sitting in the wings watching the testimony. There is one piece of testimony from a Democratic lawmaker, State Senator Jasmine Trudeau, that I almost have memorized to heart because I've watched it so many times. Because what she says in this clip, and we're going to play it for you again, this is from March. What she says in this clip is the exact problem. It is the exact wrong way of thinking about this issue.
The idea that a vehicle being stolen is more important than the individual going across the crosswalk or playing on the sidewalk, or like many neighborhoods in my community, they don't have sidewalks to play on, so they literally play in the street, which puts them at disproportional danger. It's not about the intention of the law enforcement officer. I don't think any of us would assume that any of them would want something bad to happen while they are pursuing an individual. Absolutely not. I think that's one thing that there is great consensus here. We are not accusing individual officers of any malintent. But I think when we look at situations like car theft, and I'll speak a little bit about my own experiences, Mr. President. I've had my car stolen, and it sucks. And I was working a low-wage job. What I can tell you, Mr. President, in my heart, is that if I had a choice between preserving the life of an individual in a crosswalk or on the corner or on the sidewalk playing in the street versus getting my car back, I would give up my car every single day. And that's what I think that we need to focus on, is what are we pitting against each other? The sanctity of human life versus a vehicle.
That is the straw man argument that has got us into this situation. The suggestion that this is black and white, that it's either property or human life, and that we, the law-abiding citizens, are the ones that have to make that decision, that we're deciding, in essence, whether our property is worth a human life. But when you look at the two stories that I just articulated for you, whether police pursue stolen vehicles or not, human life is still in jeopardy. The two young people who robbed this woman at gunpoint, who fired a shot and the shot ricocheted off the car door in Sumner, hit one of the people who came to help in the face. Whether it's the guy driving the stolen landscaping truck that saw two young kids walking across the street, hit them both, left one for dead in a ditch while the other one passed away. Whether it's this 50-year-old who is in a car with his partner minding their own business, is hit and killed by a teenager driving a stolen vehicle. This straw man argument that has been built up to suggest that the only people who could possibly take a life if police pursue a stolen vehicle are the police officers flying through an intersection? Are the police officers forcing that person to fly through an intersection and hurt someone? The criminals are the ones putting lives at risk. It doesn't take a police pursuit to put a life at risk. We've seen that. We've seen it over and over and over and over again. So these criminals are going to kill people, regardless of what the police do. The decision we have to make in a civilized society is, are we going to try to stop them? And I sure as hell hope that the answer is yes. You know, we have a legislative session coming up soon, and this continues to be an issue that I hope can be further rectified. You know, at the end of the legislative session last year, there was a slight fix to the police pursuit law that was passed in 2021, made it a little easier for police to pursue violent suspects, dangerous suspects, suspects that pose a grave risk to the public. But more needs to be done to put that power back in the hands of police to be able to make a judgment in the moment about whether pursuing a vehicle, a stolen vehicle, whatever it is in the interest of public safety. So I made this the subject of today's daily subscriber poll. Specifically, I wanted to know, where do you kind of put that on your list of priorities for the upcoming legislative session? Because there are just a ton of things at play. I said the 2024 legislative session begins on January 8th. Which issue would you most like to see prioritized by elected leaders? Reducing the costs associated with the Climate Commitment Act. So that would be reducing the costs at the pump. Scaling back the 2021 police reforms, like the restrictions placed on police officers when they can pursue a suspect. Easing burdens on landlords. Lord knows that's an issue right now. Drug and mental health investments. And you guys were all over the place on this. I don't think we had one particular issue that was really dominating in the conversation. A lot of you would like to see reduced costs associated with the Climate Commitment Act, further scaling back the police reform. And there's a lot that can be done in that regard as well, trying to improve public safety by giving more power to police, making less things about equitable outcomes and more things about just holding criminals accountable. Let's see. Y said, I voted for police reform. However, if the judges do not take what they deem minor crimes, nothing changes. Yeah, and that's the thing, is that it has to be, you know, it has to be all-encompassing reforms. And judges are independently elected. They don't have to listen to what lawmakers do, although lawmakers could increase standard sentencing ranges, et cetera. But you have, and we talked about this in Thurston County, you'll have them go all out trying to catch someone who, you know, steals a vehicle, hits someone in a hit and run. They'll arrest them, then they spring them loose, you know, right there on scene, or right the judge will, first appearance, because they're like, oh, well, they're young, you know, send it back to mommy and daddy. Jackie says this poll should be tiered, putting it in an order we think they should be prioritized. That would be nice. I don't think I have that capability of making a tiered poll, but good idea. Chris says the political class in Washington are a bunch of corrupt somethings. If they can't work on more than one thing at a time, they're stupid. Come on, Chris. I think they can work it. I mean, maybe I'm giving them too much credit. Certainly they can, and they do work on more than one thing at a time, although often it's a bunch of things I don't particularly like. But the poll is about what would you like to see them prioritize above all else. Danielle says, of course, all of these are important and need major overhauls in the right direction, but we need to start with public safety and allowing law enforcement to do their job. My husband witnessed the aftermath of the Puyallup shooting on Tuesday. It's scary stuff happening out there. Tony says, the Climate Commitment Act, because it's overfilling Olympia's coffers currently, bringing much more in than expected. The politicians will get addicted to that revenue. And imagine what programs they'll manufacture out of thin air to try to spend the money that they don't need. And then Andy Stevens points out that two of those will happen with initiatives. One is a city problem. The other does not get the attention that it deserves. So I think you're saying that easing burden on landlords is a city problem, although I don't necessarily agree. I think there are things that can be done legislatively to try to help landlords out at the state level. But he's right in that reducing the costs at the pump and then scaling back police reforms, those are both issues that the Let's Go Law initiatives, if they're successful, would address. So fingers crossed, everyone. All right, it's Thursday, so before we get to Florida Report, we're going to have a little clip from Elon Musk that's been circulating on the internet, and I'll share my perspective on what he had to say about advertisers on Twitter. But first, speaking of advertisers, I would never tell our advertisers to F off like Elon Musk has, because we love them. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Mike and I are members of the First Mark family. So many of our listeners and viewers have taken the First Mark challenge after hearing us talk about it, because it's a no-brainer. It doesn't cost you anything, and you might get better insurance for a lower price. The worst thing that's going to happen is they come back to you and say, no, your insurance you have right now is just fine. Go on your merry way. And then you've lost nothing. And you come away with an inflated ego because you realize that you can choose better insurance than professionals can. So Dave Taylor, he's the CEO of First Mark, and he says, look, the service they offer, I mean, it's absolutely wonderful, but it's important to know that it's not going to happen in 15 minutes or less. You are going to have to spend some time virtually with them talking about your insurance needs.
How much time did it take for you?
Couple hours.
Okay.
So total.
All in a couple hours, yep. From the time we gather the information, do the presentation and go through everything. It's a couple hours of time.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and I would say that's probably on the high end.
Yeah.
Right.
It ranges. We were chatty. We were very chatty.
Really chatty. Yes, exactly. Anywhere from an hour to 2 hours is the investment in time to find out. And there's no obligation. There's no extra fees if you become a First Mark client. We are paid the same way every other insurance agency in the state of Washington is paid. We're paid by the insurance company that is the writer of your business. And so, yeah, there's nothing to lose.
Yeah, so give yourself the peace of mind heading into the new year that you have the best insurance you can have, that you're properly covered no matter what comes your way, and that you're getting the best possible price. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Take the First Mark challenge. They work for you. Let's get to my sister in Florida. She's got a couple things to talk about, including what's happening. One of the bills that's been introduced for Florida's legislative session, which would never, ever be considered in Washington State. It's our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, greetings. We got so many compliments on your hairstyle last week. Did you know that? And now you wore it the same.
No, I didn't. But, you know, people always say, oh, your hair looks so good out of your face. So, fine.
You're so pretty. So it's just like, puke. No, I'm kidding. No, it's just like, yeah, you're just good looking. Anyway, just really starting it on an awkward note today. So a couple good stories. We're gearing up for the Newsom-DeSantis debate that no one asked for, but we'll probably watch anyway. And there's a story out, mainstream media story, I think it's a Sacramento Bee. There is a mass exodus of Californians moving to Florida.
There is, and let me tell you, I don't blame them. I mean, I love California, but if the pandemic showed anything, there's politics have a huge role in where people decide to live and work. And before the pandemic, California and Florida exchanged pretty equal numbers of people for years. But after 2019, I mean, just in the year 2022, California lost over 300,000 people and 60,000 of those people came to Florida and the rest dispersed amongst different states like Arizona, even Oregon, lots of them to Texas. But now even Texas is falling secondary to Florida. Everybody just wants to come and live here. And I think that that says a lot about how people feel about California politics.
Yeah, first, I have to note that you're going to trigger people because you said Oregon. That's how we grew up. That's how we were taught saying at Minnesota, the Oregon Trail.
Yeah, sorry. We played Oregon Trail.
Yes, and then I got here and I had a radio job and they'd be like, don't say Oregon. I'd be like, say organ, like an organ in your body? That's how you say it? Anyway, I had to note that really quick. But what's interesting about, you know, exodus from California to Florida is it's good weather to good weather. Sometimes people leave places because they're trying to find the sun or find the beaches or whatever it is. And so you know it's for other reasons, right? I mean, certainly cost of living is high in Miami, but there's a lot of places in Florida where cost of living is certainly not what it is in California. There's obviously some political things, some taxes at play. And so you know that people are coming for a reason. I wonder if that'll be brought up at the debate.
I'm sure it will. I mean, I just filled up my tank before I got home to record this and I paid less than $3 a gallon for gas. So I promise you that has something to do with it too.
All right, we're done here. Okay, Miranda, farewell, but goodbye now. No, I mean, it's ridiculous. And that's why we do this segment really, because there's such this juxtaposition between states like, well, first of all, the East Coast and the West Coast, but Washington, California, Oregon. And Florida. All right. We've been talking about ballots on the show and people's angst in Washington state and it being a mail-in state and ballots being left in mailboxes, etc. Well, Florida, there's a bill that's been introduced for your upcoming legislative session that would really take things old school.
Yeah, it would. It would allow counties to hand count ballots. And of course, all this is in hand with DeSantis' push to try to regain some confidence in the election system. And I think it's hard to like regain confidence in anything government, you know, handled. But in addition to the hand counting, this same bill would not allow the Florida Department to use the Florida Department of State to use any software or hardware that is owned, licensed, or operated by a foreign company.
Yeah.
And that to me probably would give people more confidence in the voting system than hand counting ballots, because I saw a lot of hand counting. And what did we have a problem with? Hanging chads one year and
many moons ago.
It'll be interesting to see what counties decide, if this does get passed, what counties decide to actually hand count some of their ballots.
Yeah, to me that also, we talked about this on the show yesterday, how whether it's mail-in or in-person, people are always going to have complaints, right? I think hand-counting ballots as a first run-through is just asking for delayed results that, again, further instill doubt in the outcome. That's what we see from people, right? It's like, why is it taking so long? And then that's where the seeds of doubt come in. It's like, well, okay, if you hand-count them, that's going to take for freaking ever. I understand hand-counting as like, hey, this has been challenged or something, so let's go back manually. But I do like the part, and this should be not controversial, that you said about the Florida Department of State. No voting systems that use the hardware or software designed, owned, or licensed by foreign companies. That's a no-brainer. We absolutely should not be doing that. I mean, there are some, you know, countries that we should, I guess, trust, but why risk it? Okay, one more story. Jeff Bezos has, as we know, left Seattle for Miami after many, many years here, and he's just living his best life down there, parking his big-ass yacht.
Yeah, he brought his yacht down, which was custom built just for him. And it is so big, he can't even park it with the rest of the millionaire billionaires' yachts in normal marinas. It is parked up, or if you go take a cruise from Fort Lauderdale, you can see Jeff Bezos' big, giant boat just staring you in the face while you're on your little cabin balcony on Carnival Cruise Line.
Yeah, yeah, they had to park it at the seaport. Well, I know when it was built, right, overseas, there was this whole thought about, like, they were going to have to tear down a bridge and he was going to be willing to pay for it to get his yacht out or something. Miranda, why have you, he's been there for a couple weeks now, why have you not gotten, you know, an invite on his yacht? Jeff.
You know, I think in my single days, I would have worked a little harder to get an invite on his yacht.
Well, you can be, if you figure it out, we'll hire you as the yacht correspondent. And
you know what I would like to do, because, you know, my main source of work is photographing the living spaces of very wealthy people. So it would be nice to get an invite to photograph his yacht. So maybe I can try to pull some of my strings to see if I can get aboard it for a couple photos for us.
There we go. Make it happen. You hear that, Jeff Bezos? Miranda wants to take pictures of your yacht, and she's taken. So she's not trying to be a yacht bunny or anything, you know?
No, no. She's just it's all business here.
All business, all professional. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Okay, so Elon Musk is all over the socials right now. You know, he's had issues related to some of their big advertisers ever since he took over the platform. I think you have some of those who just didn't like him from the beginning, and they didn't like, you know, they fed into everything bad that was said about him. And then you have others who maybe he said something that has offended them, and so they've pulled out. So anyway, Elon Musk was at this New York Times Deal Book Summit. You've probably seen a bunch of clips from it because there are a bunch of quote-unquote newsmakers. Vice President Kamala Harris spoke at it, et cetera. And he's being asked about the sort of issues with some of his major advertisers stopping their spending on X, including Disney. And this is what he had to say about that.
There was all of the criticism. There was advertisers leaving. We talked to Bob Iger today.
I hope
today.
They stop.
You hope?
Don't advertise.
You don't want them to advertise?
No.
What do you mean?
If somebody's going to try to blackmail me with advertising, blackmail me with money, go f*** yourself.
But
go f*** yourself. Is that clear? I hope it is. Hey, Bob, if you're in the audience.
Yeah, so Bob Iger, the head of Disney. So, look, people were like, aghast, like, oh, I can't believe he would do that, you know, and he's going to, Twitter's going to fail over it, X is going to fail over it. And he's like, well, I don't really care, because that would be the people deciding whether it's a platform that could be successful. And at the same time, he's got all these more conservatively aligned entities who are like, hey, now we're going to dump, you know, millions, billions of dollars into advertising because we agree with what you're doing. But the thing is that, like, you know, we have advertisers on the show. And of course, I would never obviously tell them to go F themselves. At the same time, if we had an advertiser who didn't like our politics, for instance, and who was trying to tell us that they would pull their money if we didn't change our tune on some controversial issue, be it gender ideology or whatever it is, we wouldn't use the F word, but we would tell them that this is just not for you. You know, then advertising on our platform is just not for you. It's not a good partnership. And we want people who believe in what we're doing. And even if they don't believe in what we're doing, who respect free speech enough to say that they think our platform can be financially beneficial to them. And so that they're going to keep their money going on it anyway. So I think that's the difference here is, like, of course he would tell them then F off. First of all, Elon and X, they don't really need, Elon for sure doesn't need their money. But if you have these big advertisers, no matter how much money they're bringing to the table, who, if Elon changes what he says, if he scales back, if he gets rid of the kind of speech that they don't want on X, then they'll give him all this money. If Elon gives into that, then he's no better than the previous owner of Twitter. He's not at all remaining true to what he said that X was going to be about and his commitment to free speech. And so I don't know why that was such a, I mean, I guess maybe the vulgar language is what got it into so many headlines, et cetera. But it doesn't surprise me at all that Elon would basically tell them, well, kick rocks. I don't, if he's, again, if you're changing what you're saying, if you're filtering what you're saying, doing a job like this, doing a job like he's doing, because you're worried about alienating advertisers, then it's probably not the right business for you anyway. So Elon Musk, he says, F off. But I think Elon Musk and X are going to be just fine. All right. One more. Can we get to one more national? We're going a little long, but I just want to comment quick on this abortion story that's going around. What in the world is this? So this is a Fox News article, but it's just a Wire article, basically. There's a bunch of entities who are doing a story on this. So there was this study by the Institute of Labor Economics that tried to look at the effects of the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Dobbs versus Jackson. So the repealing of Roe. And it claims to have found that 30,000 babies have been born that would have otherwise been aborted, according to this new study. So it's looking at since June 2022, when Roe fell, 30,000 babies in the U.S. have been born that would have otherwise been aborted. And there's a lot of conservative outlets who are sharing that, and they think it's great news, right? Because they're like sanctity of human life, and all these babies are coming into the world that otherwise would not have. But the thing is like, I know that it's easy to share studies that validate something that you're thinking. There's no way to know that. There is no statistical way to know that unless you ask the moms in the delivery room, hey, would you have aborted this child if it hadn't been for the Supreme Court decision? There's no way to know it. I hate these studies. There's no freaking way to know that. They're looking at, in states that put in, you know, stricter abortion bans after Roe, you had like a 1% increase here and there, like negligible, like not even something that you could really look at in any sort of journalistic or scientific way. And now they're like, 32,000 additional births resulted from the abortion bans, according to the studies. That's absolute bull. That is absolute bull. Did it have maybe an impact on a couple people? Sure. But there's a lot of other factors that are going on right now in the world, certainly. You always look at things like economic factors, what's happening globally, whatever it is that could contribute to the ebb and flow of birth rates in the United States and elsewhere. So the idea, if you see this headline, don't buy into it. I know, and again, it's mostly conservative outlets that are really spreading it like, hey, we've, you know, saved a bunch of unborn children. You might have saved some, but there's no way to know. And in my mind, this is just completely manufactured. Either one side's going to use it, you know, to say, oh, look, the Republicans have forced 32,000 women into forced labor. And then on the right, they're going to be like, oh, we saved 32,000 babies. When in reality, it's a study that is absolutely ridiculous. Okay, doom spending. Have you heard that phrase before? So going into, remember we said last week, okay, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Small Business Saturday, we really want to look at how spending shapes up, see if it says anything about the economy. But spending was actually pretty good year over year when it came to holiday spending on that kind of Black Friday weekend and the adjacent manufactured spending days. But the CNBC article, it says Americans are doom spending. Here's why that's a problem. And what they say doom spending is spending more and saving less, despite a bad economy. And CNBC admits that virtually every single American, there's been a bunch of polls on this. I mean, a high percentage of Americans, I think they had a poll that said something like 92% of Americans are concerned about the current state of the economy. Yet you have spending that is through the roof. And doom spending when they're spending more on stuff they don't need and they're saving less money. And CNBC basically says that that could be attributed to the feeling of doom, the sense of doom and dread, where it's like, I don't care how scared I am about the economy. I'm just like, almost like you think it doesn't matter. Like, oh, nothing matters anymore. Things are so bad. I'm just going to go spend money on crap that is going to make me happy on the inside and not worry about saving money because the economy might take a you know what in 6 months. So anyway, it's Thursday, so we thought we'd have Zach Abraham on with Bulwark Capital to ask him about this phenomenon, whether it's real and what it might mean about the economy. Zach Abraham, welcome back to Undivided.
Oh, thanks for having me. Good to be back.
Did you doom spend over the past weekend? It's a new phrase I'm just learning about.
Well, I just always thought it meant having children, right? And then that precipitated the doom spending because they're capital black holes, right? They suck it up. Funny you brought this up for topics because it's one of the things that we're focused the most on right now. I don't think the doom spending is a real thing in terms of, like, I don't think it's going to be around. I think that, you know, we look into finance and economics and all that kind of stuff. There's a there's just a very large part of it that's based on human behavior. And I don't think enough people give that enough attention. And I think it's kind of an extension off what a good buddy of mine refers to as financial nihilism, getting $5,000 checks in the mail, government handouts. I think it's created a swath of younger folks, usually, you know, 35, 30, somewhere in there and younger, that have become rather nihilistic about a lot of things. And it doesn't surprise me at all that that extends to spending. Interesting survey came out the other day where they surveyed people up and down the age range, and they said, what amount of money would make you feel comfortable, right? What do you need to live your desired lifestyle? And I believe the average answer for people over the age of 50 was $125,000. Mm-hmm. And for the average person under, I want to say 35, the answer was $500,000. Right. So
that sounds right.
The people that are protesting against Israel, the people that are supporting Bernie, right, the people that hate capitalism and everything, they just need a cool $500,000, right? And they'll be good to go. So I think that society is more materialistic than it's ever been. I think if you don't think so, go look at social media. Go look at the age groups that are most involved in social media. And isn't it interesting that these people continue to doom spend, quote unquote, even though they're out of capital? It's perfectly consistent with everything else we've seen. So I don't really think it's a new thing. I don't think it's an economic phenomenon. I do think that things like that are delaying the recession or have delayed it. I think it's starting. I mean, it appears to be starting now or starting in the near future. But I don't think you can glean anything good or bad from the Black Friday results.
Well, and is it – so when you look at Black Friday, Cyber Monday, you know, and you look at how much was spent and you sort of assess it, is it – an indicator of what might come for the economy, or is it more like psychological? Does it reflect more what the American consumer is sort of how they're feeling and what they're thinking?
Yeah. So generally speaking, I think that if you see an increase in cyber spending, I mean, look, for instance, I don't really think there's anything to glean from a 7.5% increase in cyber spending, because you've got to figure out, you know, and I go look at the numbers and probably give you a closer estimate, but I would suggest somewhere between 2-4% of that, or let's call it 25-50% of that increase is just natural increase of online shopping. Okay. Right. It's going to continue to happen, and it'll happen less and less. You know, if we go back 5 years ago, the Black Friday numbers were up like 15-20%, right? As more and more people were adopting online shopping. So there's a certain amount of that. And then you factor in over the last 12 months, going back to last year, Black Friday, inflation over that period of time is probably averaged 5%. So you can really easily look at it and go, okay, you could make an argument that if we include inflation, that's actually a dip. Now, I don't even think that's the appropriate way to look at it, though. I don't think it's a good news number. I don't think it's a bad news number. I think that people could be shopping more on Black Friday because they're tighter financially, right? Looking for better deals. I think they could be shopping on Black Friday because they're going to spend more this holiday season. I just don't think there's anything to glean from it. You know what I mean?
That's an interesting point that, hey, I'm going to get the best deals on. What did I buy? Oh, it's a really small thing. But like, I have this face lotion that I swear by, and it's overpriced. It's way overpriced. And I know it, right? I get it anyway. And I was on.
What's it called?
I don't want to give a commercial. Nicole, okay, you use it now too, right? It's a Dr. Jart product. I think it's like $48. And I know that's ridiculous, but I like it. And then I go on Sephora.com and it was half off. So I'm like, well, I have to stock up because
you're losing money if you don't.
Right. They're basically begging me to buy it. It's interesting because that is true that I think if you have a splurge of spending there, is it because they're going to spend a lot? I polled my subscribers on this. We do a poll every morning and I asked them before Black Friday, are you going to spend more, less, or about the same? And a lot of them pointed out something you alluded to, which is, I'm going to buy the same amount of stuff, but it's going to cost me a lot more. You know, I'm going to buy the same amount of groceries for Thanksgiving, but it's going to cost me a lot more. So technically, does that mean you're spending more? I guess so.
Well, but to put all that aside, Joe Biden did announce recently, that's the fourth cheapest Thanksgiving dinner we've ever had.
It was like, do you remember? Sorry, we're off the track. But do you remember? I love it how he's like, we made things unbearably expensive for a few years and then it got slightly better, so we're going to celebrate that. It was like his first 4th of July in office, where he's like, oh, the cost of 4th of July barbecue is down 17 cents or something. And meanwhile, we're all like, oh, gas prices are, it's just insane. The things they'll spin, there's no end to it.
Oh, well, here's the funny part, though. Like, you always expect them to spin. I'm just shocked that made it past, like, the you know, the prep work, right? I'm just shocked somebody didn't sit there and go, whoa. No. Let's try to take credit for falling inflation, but don't say it that way because you're just going to tick people off. I mean, it was just – I mean, everybody that heard it was insulted by it. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't even make sense politically. I was just like, who – guy, everybody talks about his handlers. His handlers need to get better.
Yeah, I mean, we're way past that. All right, Zach, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And if you want to hear more from Zach on the state of the economy and all sorts of crazy topics that we decide to talk about and he talks about on his show, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. While you're there, you can also hear about Bulwark Capital Management's risk management strategy. You've worked too hard to save for retirement. Don't let Joe Biden's economy be the thing that takes it away from you. So knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, let's get to questions and comments. As we speed toward the end of our show, on the debate we were just having about whether you should be able to give public testimony on issues that aren't related to city business or aren't sort of specifically on the docket, Sunset Carson says, separation of church and state, city business only. Lieutenant Dan says, I disagree with you, Brandy. City council meetings should be reserved for the ongoing agenda, not an open forum to speak your mind. Public comments that deviate only waste time and taxpayer money. Well, maybe there's kind of a middle ground. Maybe it can be city business, but not... So city business that's not on the agenda, but not stuff that's not city business. So not like all this stuff about what's happening in the Middle East, only because... there are issues that are relevant that city council members should be asked about. They should be able to talk about that they might never bring up. They might never put it on the agenda. And then you eliminate the opportunity for citizens to bring it to their attention and to talk to them face to face and say, hey, this is going on and I need help with it. All right. AvGeek Joe with a $2 super chat. One of my favorite topics. Now discuss Alex Zimmerman. Alex Zimmerman is like the crazy guy who shows up at all the Seattle City Council meetings. And one time I knocked him because they let him speak when he was talking about, I think, like sexual assault in terms of like hoping one of the council members got sexually assaulted. It was wild, wild stuff. He's crazy. On hand counts, Florida considering allowing counties to specifically and only hand count their ballots. Paul says, folks who think hand counting is a panacea for eliminating voter fraud or inaccuracy have never engaged in a hand count of any significance. The time and effort hand counting and verifying the accuracy would not be acceptable in this day of instant results. Yeah, and I mean, I guess you could have people monitoring it, but you do have humans and you're open to the whim and the nature of human beings, which is scary. On teens and car theft, Mary Christie says, and we sit here and wonder why our car insurance is outrageous. Elwin Wheeler says, why do we continually allow criminals off the hook, hold them accountable? It's unbelievable. Lam Ho says, seriously, you would give up your car? Talking about the comment from the Democratic lawmaker. How about my car? If they took my car, I can't work. She and many people are going to vote anti-police She and many people are going to vote anti-police chasing. She already did. That was a clip from March. All right, on spending, holiday spending, what we just talked with Zach Abraham about. Deanne says, could it be that people are spending because they know items will be more expensive as time goes on? That's true. There are some things where you anticipate, like the price of that's going to go up.
Yeah, definitely on the sales. But for sure, on the sales. I think Lieutenant Dan...
Lieutenant Dan says, you want to read it? Daryl wants to read comments, and people are like, Nicole doesn't want to read comments?
Well, sometimes I'm just doing too many things.
She's working like, over
today
there.
Today is just
stressing out.
Crazy.
She has to go to the bathroom really bad right now, by the way.
I do. I've had to pee for about 3 hours. But
first of all, it's not my fault she hasn't peed.
It's not. But Lieutenant Dan's, his theory is the real issue is that a lot of people are taking on more credit card debt to maintain their current lifestyle instead of saving or making cuts. And I think that's absolutely correct.
100%. And that's why Zach Abraham was saying they had these record defaults on credit cards is because you got all this money during the pandemic, right? Where it was like gifted to you. You didn't work for it. So it's like you don't have the same level of value that you place on it as what you work for. And then you're like, oh, buy this, whatever it is. Or you got unemployment because you weren't working because of COVID and unemployment was higher than your old paycheck or whatever it is.
Or just everything costs more.
Or everything costs
gas,
more.
I mean, gas. Are you driving less because gas costs more? I mean, I know I'm not, and I'm totally guilty of what Lieutenant Ann just says here.
Oh, Nicole, be guilty of it.
I still drive too much.
Just feed your cats less.
Eat out too much.
Yeah,
feed my cats too much. Yeah.
All right. Good questions and comments. I'll make our closing sanity check on the show short and sweet today. Regardless of what happens in the sentencing tomorrow for Joshua Ellis in the Wendy Traynor case, I think we all know what the sane outcome would be. I think we all know that it is insane to consider allowing someone who traveled from out of state into our state, across the country, to take the life of someone who he claimed to love. I think we all understand, who those of you who are watching, those of you who are listening, that the state of our criminal justice system is in disrepair, that it is not doing what it's supposed to be doing, that it is not centered on justice, true justice, that it's centered on manufactured ideas around what it means to be equitable. Apparently, equitable is to look at someone's skin color and use that as a judge to decide how much time they should spend in prison, as opposed to looking strictly at the facts of the case, which I thought is what we were working toward. I thought we were working to put the days behind us where skin color was a basis for how someone was treated in the criminal justice system. Going backward is not progress. It doesn't matter how you try to frame it as progress. Those of us with common sense know that that is absolutely insane. All right, that is it for today's episode of Undivided. We will post in the comments the location of the Wendy Traynor case tomorrow, the sentencing for Josh Ellis. Just a reminder, I don't support sending any sort of letters to the judge in this case. I don't support protesting outside the court because I don't think it's going to be helpful. I think that actually might have the opposite of the intended impact. But if you want to go to the hearing, sit there, be there to support Wendy's family, wear a ribbon in honor of Wendy Traynor, I think that's perfectly appropriate. And so I will post that again in the comments of the show on Patreon, Locals, YouTube, and over on Facebook. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to sanity, your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not signed up to support the show already, please do so. It's how we continue to do this. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Nicole, you can go pee.